Welcome everyone to the first episode of GameSpot After Dark of 2024. Is that correct or did I just lie there?
I have no idea. I was out last. No, I think we did one 2 weeks ago.
Welcome everyone to the second episode of GameSpot After Dark of 2024, potentially. I am your host, Tom Hossein, joined as always by the podfather, Jake Decker.
We're going to read your email on...
Email? Oh shit, my email is visible. I should probably not have that.
It's not live though, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's only visible to my colleagues who are definitely should not be able to see this stuff. I'm also joined by Lucy James.
Hi, why can I have a cool name like Podfather? Oh, I'm going to regret asking that.
I don't have a cool name for you. I just call you Jams. So.
Yeah, you call me Jams, which is a cool name. I mean, Jen and Greg... My old roommates called me Horse Legs.
So. Horse Legs is not a good...
I know. I need something better.
Where did that name come from?
My knees bend backwards, Jake. Hang on. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, listening.
It's good. I believe you. No. I don't need to see.
I'll never get used to seeing that.
That's not that weird. I expected more.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I'm in my 30s now. I'm an old woman.
Yeah.
Not as bad as I used to be.
We have been... doing not a lot, so this is going to be an interesting podcast. Stuff has happened, thankfully.
I hate to be, and I can't talk about it yet, but I've been poop-socking a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's same. I've been poop-socking games that we can't talk about right now, but we will be able to talk about hopefully soon. But in the meantime, there are games that have come out and things that we've done that we can talk about.
Yeah, boy.
We can also briefly touch on the Xbox stuff, which just happened for us. In particular, I just kind of want to focus on Indiana Jones because we've finally seen it. What do you guys think about it?
I have a lot of mixed feelings.
Oh, really?
Well, I'd say generally...
What's your fandom level of Indiana Jones?
I love Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones is... Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, is the best movie ever made. I was very excited for this project, mostly because of Machine Games.
Mm.
And I'm still excited for this project because it's Machine Games. Yep. I have high hopes for this story.
Because
it's Machine Games. Gameplay seems more like a immersive sim than I expected, which is kind of cool. I think that's a good way to play it for Indiana Jones, because you can't really make like a Wolfenstein like with Indiana Jones. That'd be too much. So I'm super curious. I think visually it looked a little strange. I don't know, it just looked off. And then hearing Troy Baker as Indiana Jones also felt a little off.
There were times when, like, Troy is clearly very talented, but I don't know if it's us because we're so familiar with his voice.
I think that's it.
But I could hear the Troy Baker in it.
Yeah.
But I could also hear the Harrison Ford in it. And I was like, okay, I can't tell if it's me that I just know his voice that well.
I think normies won't notice. No, it's Harrison Ford. I bet people will notice.
People will know.
They won't hear Troy Baker, though. Normies probably won't hear Troy Baker.
That's the thing. I mean, I remember spoiling a twist in a game.
Yeah.
Because I recognize Troy's voice. And that is not on him. That is because I just play a lot of games that he is in and I just recognize him. But I will say one thing I'm really glad about is with all the shit about AI voices, I'm really glad that they just didn't gobble.
AI Harrison Ford.
Yeah, gobble a Harrison Ford. Because I mean, this is my broader bugbear, is that I hate the Hollywood de-aging trend too.
Oh, yeah, because it looks so bad.
Yeah, and I kind of long for a time when you would just get a younger person who kind of looked like Harrison Ford, say Alden Ehrenreich, who literally played him in a whole movie. But no, Disney, you'll just de-age him in the new Indiana Jones, whatever. And so I don't mind sound-alikes. Hey, it's how Tom Hanks's brother gets a ton of work. He's his voice stand-in for Woody and everything. Yeah, Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
My favorite thing, do you ever see that Graham Norton clip where Tom Hanks is talking about it and he's just like, yeah, I don't know what projects he's on.
He's his own man, just with my voice.
He could be on Cameo for all I know.
So,
and also as someone who is not particularly married to Indiana Jones, watch the
Wish I was, but...
Oh, you like that whip? Anyway, as someone who's not particularly married to Indiana Jones, like I watched them when I was a kid and I do want to go back and rewatch them. I still think...
You can skip some.
Well, I want to watch the first three.
One and three, very good. Two,
I don't.
It has its defenders, I guess.
Which one is two again?
Temple of Doom.
Which one's that?
Oh, is that Short Round?
That's Short Round.
Oh yeah, that's the highly problematic one.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I couldn't even tell you. I know that one is Raiders of the Lost Ark, the one with the little cup.
No, that's
Indiana Jones and the
Last Crusade.
You're talking about that makes way more sense.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
when they drink the
Is that the Nazis? That one.
I mean, the Nazis, isn't Nazis are in all of them. Well, yeah. The second one, not really. I guess
this is why I get so confused.
Which one is Monkey Shia LaBeouf?
That one's Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Oh, God, I watched that one. That one was not fun.
Yeah, don't see that one.
Put Shia LaBeouf in this game.
No, so I'm not particularly a huge Indiana Jones fan, unlike our colleague Adam Mason, who has had an Indiana Jones
phone cover
since maybe 2014.
But it's like printed on like Zazzle. So
God bless him. I imagine that.
It wasn't printed like properly, so it just says Indian Jones.
Indian Joan.
And the A is on like the edge of it, so you can't see.
Indian Jones.
That's how you like Indian Jonesy.
I think to Jake's point, the thing I'm most excited about is Machine Games.
Yeah.
I loved Wolfenstein, their remakes. Did not really care for the co-op one.
Young Blood. I didn't play it. But that is the other part of this conversation where I'm still waiting for Wolfenstein 3.
We've been waiting a long time.
I know. And I don't think it's going to happen now. But yeah, man, the way 2 ended.
Oh, God, that was so great.
Could have been more. And like, I still think back, man, Wolfenstein, like Machine Games, Wolfenstein games are immaculate. They're great. They're fantastic. And not getting a third one bums me out, but I guess it's for Indiana Jones, which I'm happy with because I love Indiana Jones, but at the same time, I'm just like, I could have done one more Wolfenstein.
Yeah, give me one more.
Maybe that'll be their next thing.
Yeah.
Visually, it did look like, because you mentioned that it looked a bit rough at times. It very much seemed like, hey, we're going to be putting your game in this showcase, whether you like it or not. So give us the bit that looks okay.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I am confident that it's going to look considerably better than that when it comes out. As far as I know, it's like, it should be looking better considering it's out this year, but who knows what pass, the visual pass they're on or whatever it may be. But even then, it looks okay. Like I like the way the villain looked. I think like Harrison Ford's face was a bit weird. Where I was like, what's going on?
Do you think it's more
Uncanny Valley?
Uncanny Valley style?
No, I think I looked at it and I was like, it looks like his face isn't textured properly or whatever it may be. Maybe just I'm used to like super high detail. But the villain looked really good by comparison. I was like, okay, cool. So they clearly have some work left to do visually, but I'm excited for where it could be. I don't care about Indiana Jones one bit, but if they're going to make a kind of immersive sim with that IP, I'm definitely interested in that. And like you said, it's Machine Games and they just make great games. So I'm sure they'll figure out a way to make it interesting and fun for people who don't really care about Indiana Jones as well.
Mm. I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the puzzle solving aspect of it. They're my favorite parts of Tomb Raider, of Uncharted. I, as a child, really wanted to be, I watched The Mummy, man. I wanted to
make
be
a mummy
Egyptologist.
Game. I would kill.
Why is
I
that
would,
not?
I would oh. rather wipe Indiana Jones out of existence.
And get The Mummy?
For The Mummy. I would do that in a second. Rick O'Connell is better.
I haven't played that one that came out
Mummy
a couple
Demastered?
Years ago. Yeah,
really
which
good.
Which is really,
it's really good.
Good, yeah. But I would love a third-person action adventure game.
Dude. They've made one. Years ago on PS2.
Yeah, it was not good.
Okay. I was like, no. Yeah. Was it based on The Mummy animated series? Because that.
No, I think it was based on the second movie, maybe. And it was not good. I played it at a friend's house once, and we, even at that age, we were both like, yeah, this sucks.
But no, I love the puzzle-solving aspect of it. It tickles my brain in a very particular way because I love history, love learning about. Dude, if you don't listen to the Fall of Civilizations podcast, you're missing out.
If you want to learn the real history of Imhotep, you got to listen to that podcast.
They haven't put out an episode since like April last year, but it's because every episode is like 3 hours long with custom voice acting and music and everything. And I'm,
damn.
Yeah, they also put them on YouTube. They're great.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I'm most excited about. The whip stuff looks cool, but, you know, I will.
There was that one bit where they showed the wireframe of the whip, which looks so funny for
some
reason.
Ridiculous.
It looked like he was, like, throwing a snake at a wall.
And whoever edited that trailer and timed the punches
to the music. Yeah.
Great job. Yeah. It looks cool. I'm a little more excited about it than I was.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's coming out this year, supposedly.
I think
what they said.
I mean, I think this is going to... Don't make me eat my words. Phil Spencer, but this could be a really great year for Xbox. In terms of, you know, there have been so many years of Xbox got no games. You bought all those studios. You're not doing anything with them.
Well, every game they showed off is coming out this year, right?
Yeah.
Yep. That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, very exciting time to be an Xbox fan.
Or a PC gamer like me.
I liked a lot of what I saw there. There were some other games in the showcase as well, or the dev showcase, I guess. We got a nice look at Hellblade, which is also out this year.
So digital only.
Digital only, interesting.
$50, same length as the last one.
Yeah, I mean, like, everyone got hyper mad at Remedy for that, and now it's like, how you like them apples?
Yeah.
Like, but I'm very, very excited for that game. Ninja Theory is one of my favorite studios. Slightly biased because they are British, you know, hanging out in Cambridge. And, you know, they made some of my favorite games of all time.
Also, shout out to ex-GameSpot employee Bill Potter.
Bill Potter, Big Willy style.
Appeared in that video.
Yeah, he was there hanging around here. But yeah, that game looks really interesting. Like, the original Hellblade is still something that no one else has tried to emulate. It's entirely its own. The things that it goes for, obviously they have Norse mythology and kind of character action combat, but they're one of the few studios that have taken a lot of those familiar ideas and made it completely their own in a way that no one else is even trying or can do it in that way. So it's very, very exciting that they took and that game was obviously, the story of that game was like, they built that on a shoestring budget and they very much like MacGyvered equipment together to do it. And they come up with like very cost effective mocap techniques that were like cameras taped to poles and that kind of stuff. That was their whole like market. They were like, look how we have no money. This is how we're doing this. Looks awesome. And now they're a Microsoft owned studio with presumably an endless amount of money to do it. And they've got a brand new studio. This is very exciting, but it seems like the sensibilities that gave way to what they were trying to achieve with that game, especially exploring in mental health and using presentation and actual design to further that, it looks like it's there in spades again with the whole change of like how binaural audio works and kind of like the shift in how Senua is dealing with her internal conflicts and external conflicts versus that. So I'm very, very excited to see that. I think the one question I have was the combat in the original Hellblade was kind of hit and miss for various reasons.
You try and hit and you don't.
Yeah, sometimes you miss. I'm interested to see how they evolve that, if they evolve that, and what they
did. They did mention the combat's had a bit of an overhaul.
Yeah.
I really want to go back and, because I mean, 2017? Long time ago.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it still looks nice and I think it plays, it's interesting enough to carry you through it, even if it's not as satisfying and intuitive as it could be.
It's short too.
Yeah,
it's very short.
Six to eight hours
or so. It's intense though. Yeah. I remember I played it a little bit for it fairly recently. I remember thinking, this is intense. This is a lot.
Mate, I bought that wireless Xbox headset for us when we got really into Halo for that month.
It was a good month.
It was a great month. But I haven't touched it since.
The headset and Halo.
Yeah, the headset and Halo. So I'm really looking forward to actually getting in there and listening to it as Ninja Theory intended.
Yeah, I'm excited. This feels like the Series X's first big cinematic sort of narrative driven game, at least that comes to mind right now. I know we've had like Starfield and
Hi-Fi Rush,
but like this is sort of that prestige AAA game that Sony usually does so well with their franchises that I feel like Xbox fans maybe haven't quite had that itch scratched. So I'm excited to see what they do, but also to everyone's point, like Ninja Theory usually does some really interesting stuff with their characters, the stories they tell, the way they design audio. Like, it's all seems exciting, and I'm happy we got a release date because I swear to God, we've been showed that game so many times, and it's like cool, but when can we play it?
I was so surprised they didn't do one at Game Awards, but then they were obviously holding it for this.
Yeah.
But yeah, when they did the Game Awards, new look at gameplay and the musical number, I was like, all right, guys, this is it. We got no. But it had already leaked. We had seen that May 21st date bandied around a bunch. All the lights just went off outside our studio and it looks pretty haunting.
Yeah.
Are we on camera, by the way?
No.
Oh, and then I'm going to move. I feel really weird because I'm like half facing the camera that's not on.
Yeah, no cameras today.
Thank God.
Good.
A couple of other games that we can quickly rattle through. It was a very tight and focused
48 minutes.
The other surprise was they didn't talk about this ahead of time like they did with the other games, but Square Enix popped up with Visions of Mana. I don't think we have any major... You like Mana, don't you?
Never played them, actually.
Okay, cool.
So I got nothing
I always forget. Like, you're into, like, some JRPGs. Always catch me off guard, which is like...
Catch me some off guard, anime. Too.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's like, you don't play a lot of them, but then you're like, oh, yeah, I've played every single Dragon Quest or some shit like that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, weird. But the Mana series, obviously, a historically beloved RPG franchise. First time it's coming to Xbox. Looks cool. Very kind of stylized, and a lot of air juggling happening in that game for some reason. But I don't have a particularly strong affiliation for Mana. I played a bunch of Secrets of Mana, and it's fantastic. But since then, it's not one of those franchises that I'm desperate for it to come back. But I'm glad that it's there. It's a pretty big deal for Microsoft as well, to kind of like...
They're continuing to court the Japanese devs. Yeah. And it, I mean, we saw it, was it Summer Game Fest last year when they had a bunch of, you know, the Persona 3 Reload and Yakuza in their summer event, and then strengthening their relationship with Square and Capcom. It's pretty cool to see, because, you know, yeah.
I don't think I've felt this kind of commitment or like presence on Xbox since they did the Sakaguchi stuff back in the day, where it was like, we've got a bunch of these, the Mistwalker games, you know, Blue Dragon and
Lost Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. But it's good to see that they are still playing in that region and trying to ensure that the people worldwide that love games from Japan feel represented and catered to on the Xbox platform, which is great. Yeah. The other games were Avowed, which looks interesting.
Yeah.
Obsidian's been doing some really cool stuff. Jake's going to sit this one out as a former employee of Obsidian.
Got nothing to say. I mean, I have things to say, but I'm not going to share them.
That's wisely smart. Which is a smart thing to do. So like Obsidian, they make excellent RPGs and narrative-driven games, choice-driven games, and that's exactly what Avowed looks like. It looks like they're trying to not adhere to, but building off the template that they kind of established with Outer Worlds. That kind of like hub, but not hub based, but like small area based thing, and then kind of layering on a Skyrim esque RPG on top of it.
I will say I'm really interested in the combat. It kind of looks like it'll scratch. I know the comparison of another Skyrim, but you know, if you want to be reductive, yes.
But some also, like, one of the biggest compliments that you could potentially pay, like, oh, it's another one of those games that sold $1 billion.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm really intrigued by that. I will say, I don't think it was the best showing for the narrative stuff.
No.
I think that felt, just despite them, you know, they've only got a certain amount of time, trying to give context for the decisions that the characters were making, the players were making, and then just kind of having these one-off lines. I was like, this could have just been a combat showcase for me. And you could have just told me that you've got the Obsidian narrative stuff in there, and I would have believed you.
Yeah, I feel like in this scenario, you don't want to show off narrative. What you want to show off is characters. And that's the other thing that I hope that like big RPG developers start to think about more. Like, people don't really want to see a small slice of a story anymore. And you risk kind of falling on your face when you do that stuff. But what you can do is, in the same way that every RPG tries to be like, look at the cute character we got, the cute pet. I think you can do that in a RPG with like, this is a cool character. Like, imagine if the only thing that we had seen of Baldur's Gate during one of their showcases was Karlach. Like, people are going to spend ages talking about that character. Or, you know, any number of Astarion or whoever it may be. I feel like if there's an opportunity to showcase, if you want to showcase a narrative, focus on the character and who they are instead, which is way cooler. I feel like you get way more mileage out of that. But I'm interested in seeing more of Avowed.
The sickest key art of any game, by the way.
Looks insane. Like, so good. Whoever did that key art, or whoever it may be, single person. Good job. That is a tattoo waiting to be made. Other game, Ara. History Untold.
People seem excited for this game. It's not my kind of game, but people seem very excited.
Good for them. Well, I'm in it.
Yeah. What?
You see that? Yeah. Not really. But there was a character who looks like
There's a white woman with short hair. Okay.
Yeah. Someone tweeted me and said, look at you. I wish there could be my kind of game. I remember when Civ, what was the last Civ? 6?
Yeah.
Came out, and Chris, who we used to work with, was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
like an absolute demon for Civ, yeah. and I tried it, and I just went, oh, this is a bit overwhelming for me, lads.
Yeah. Without sounding reductive, it is very much we have Civ at home, but not like to the degree where it's like we've got a crap version of it. This is like the Firaxis team.
Yeah.
Former Firaxis members set up a new studio, and now they're making what is essentially a Civ-style game.
Yep.
And I think the big deal, the kind of big hook for them this time around is this living world, where a lot of the stuff in the Civ stuff is like you have a fairly static game space,
mm-hmm.
and then your movement around there and like how you interact with certain things dictates it. Whereas this is more like a world that is alive. So one of the things that they talked about was like animals that could become aggressive, like was it coyotes or something like that were getting annoying or stuff like that?
Cougars,
yeah.
Damn.
So,
because everyone hates cougars, and I was like, I don't think you'd say that to their face.
No. But yeah, that's. I mean, not for me. I played a decent amount of Civ in my time, like, especially like Civ Rev. I played a crazy amount of, but I think I'm just not at the stage where this is the kind of thing that excites me. But I know there's a huge audience for this, yeah. and even bigger one, or as big a one, that is, it will be interested in it because of the pedigree of the developer being former Firaxis people.
It's also been what, 8 years since Civ 6?
Yeah, it's been
DLC.
Yeah,
I think it came out in 2016. Yeah, 2017. I don't know.
And I also think like this is a very potentially smart move from Microsoft. Civ has cornered the market on grand strategy, on that scale to that production level. There's obviously like Paradox makes 1 billion grand strategy games.
The McElroys did a Monster Factory on it.
I don't know. Do you remember?
It was a Civ style game.
Spore.
God damn it.
And probably like Europa Universalis
or something like that. But they had that.
So I feel like that. Yeah, Civ is kind of like Cardinal McElroy's Grand Deception.
Could be that one.
It probably is that, yeah. No, this is about...
From the Catholic World
This is the Catholic
World
Report. Where the Cardinal
McElroy... Different McElroys.
Yeah. In reality, what McElroy is advocating for in the... what's his? Synodality is a kind of Crypto Vatican III.
Is this one of those...
this is a weird thing going on
someone
here.
Someone in my family got radicalized by one of those Catholic websites.
Yeah.
They're already Catholic.
But yeah, so there's very few developers or properties out there that does like that kind of Civ style game. And obviously Civilization's owned by, is it Take-Two?
Yeah.
2K, got that kind of thing. If Microsoft can make this one pop off, they will be one of two major players in that genre, which is a huge deal because, you know, I think of it in the same way that Flight Sim is. No one's making Flight Sim except Microsoft right now. Not any competing ones anyway. So they could potentially corner another part of the market. And having this as kind of like a jewel in their crown is particularly smart, I think, if it works as intended and it pays off and it develops an audience. Especially if they like can continue the kind of like have a presence in the same way that Civ does on something like Game Pass on PC and console, bringing these one out every couple of years.
That's the thing as well. Game Pass has pretty much reached saturation on console, and PC is the new market they want to hit. And you've seen them really go to town on Age of Empires and other.
Oh yeah, they have Age of Empires.
Yeah, other PC forward properties. So it's a smart, shrewd move. Smart move, Microsoft.
Yeah.
I'm in a weird mood.
And that kind of covers everything that was at the Xbox. They just call it a Direct. I love that they were just like, whatever.
Developer Direct. But they put an underscore in between, so it's edgy.
I like the whole, like, on a computer typing out style.
On
that
Miro.
They have.
Yeah. See everyone's cursor flying around.
And also, so I think it was as a show quite tight. I really like that. The baked in subtitles is something that you called out on Twitter. That was very cool. I like that a lot. Really helps with accessibility. Overall, I really enjoyed it. I love that they set the expectations from the outset and they had one small surprise.
Love it.
That was great. Didn't let people speculate too much.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I...
There were certain people on Twitter being like, why if Elden Ring showed up?
That was me.
Yeah, no.
No, I didn't say I think Elden Ring will show up. I tweeted a picture of Carly and I said I'm leaving milk and cookies out in case Santa comes. But my one complaint about this showcase, and I tweeted this out, I felt it was a bit sanitized. There are so many marketing beats to hit, but I think if you compare the, not to say that the devs weren't passionate, but they are obviously working from a script.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that energy versus Dinga Bacaba on stage at Game Awards.
Doing kicks.
Yeah, or Abu on stage at Game Awards crying and like, you know, having this big, big moment where it's emotional.
Yeah.
You feel the passion behind those projects. And not to say that the passion's not here in this. I'm just saying it's two different ways of presenting the same.
It feels staged.
Yeah. And I think the one section out of all of the five that were shown where there was a little bit more dynamic interaction was the Hellblade section, where that was clearly interviewing.
Yeah.
Rather than here's your script. Yeah. And I think having the sections of them in the mocap and performance capture, I thought added a little bit more.
Yeah.
That is merely me as a producer. That is producer brain.
It's true. I also feel like there is space for it because they did it a little bit, I think, with the Ara thing where that guy walks in the background.
That's the thing. You get more moments like that when you kind of go off the cuff a little bit. And they are fun. They are things that will be memed. And Xbox, as a brand on social, really loves leaning into their memes. Shout out to Josh Stein over there. But they know what's going to connect with their audience. And I wish they would just loosen the reins on these directs a little bit to allow for more of those.
Yeah. Or just chuck in some outtakes. Like, you had a bit of that at the end, but like a little bit more of that, it would be funny. But yeah, overall, good job.
Good shit.
Let's move on to what we've actually been playing. I know that we are bound not to speak about some of the games we're playing, but one thing that we can talk about that is out now is Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. Jake, have you played it?
Nope.
Oh,
do you have any interest in playing it?
I didn't, and then people said it was really good, and
it's so good. I've been playing it. I finished it, Lucy.
I'm halfway through.
Yeah, so
I moved on to the other thing because
time is a ticking. But yeah, it's a game that I kind of. We played it at, was it Gamescom?
Summer Game Fest.
It was off site. And like, it was like a couple of stations. Here's the new Prince of Persia 30 game.
Minutes. 30 minutes,
just play the game. And I remember coming out of that and being like, oh, this is really interesting. This is potentially could be big. My only concern was like, it felt like it wasn't recognizable as a Prince of Persia game. And I feel like now that I've played it, that's also kind of one of its strengths. There are definitely nods to Prince of Persia there.
Yeah,
that
like he does the wall run.
He does the wall run when you do the air dash. Yeah, and it's like, there's also set up for, you know, you're not playing as the prince. You're effectively playing as one of the prince's bodyguards and like the immortals who are like pledging to look after and protect Persia.
Mm-hmm.
And you play like the newest recruit who's clearly got very capable, but
he's got ego issues.
Oh yeah, he's got. I mean, like
he wants to prove himself.
Yeah, they also kind of like turned him into a kind of. We need to make him quite likable, so he becomes that archetype.
He's a little. I think I said this when we were recording Bombcast or whatever it was, but there's a little Zagreus in there in the writing. Yes. And that's not a bad thing, but it's very much. Oh, they saw Hades and were like, yeah, we need to make Sargon a little bit more stoic and a little bit more, sexy.
It is a Metroidvania style game. I know people hate that term now, but it's the most appropriate way to talk about it. But it's kind of like it puts its own spin on it in introducing a few features that are really, really valuable.
I cannot imagine playing a Metroidvania without the picture one.
So have you seen this thing?
No.
So at any point, or like there's like a currency that you play, but it's like very easy. You could basically use them 14 times, and then once you get to the max, I think you have to like start removing them. But what you can do is you press down on the D-pad and it takes a snapshot of the screen you're in, and then it pins that to where you are on the map. So let's say you run into a room and there's a door there and you can't get through it.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So cool.
And then like when you're like circling the map and you're like, oh, what's this dead end? Instead of being like, oh, that's probably where I have to go, running all the way there and being like, oh, this was that one room that I forgot about that's got the key. You just hover over it and you're like, oh, okay, here's this thing. I know what I need to do there. I think that is very, very cool. Some of the other stuff, I'm trying to remember now.
Really good accessibility options.
Accessibility options are very good.
Options to skip particularly difficult platforming sections. You open like a little portal and just zips you to the top.
Yeah.
Changes on parry window timing.
Yeah.
You can adjust how much damage your enemies give and take. Sargon's health. You can buy hints. It's great. It's so approachable, but all the big Metroidvania fans that I know, and Tam obviously among them, just singing its praises.
It's the combat is surprisingly in depth. Like, it's got a lot going on for it, and you start working in things like traversal mechanics and like other things, and it becomes a very, very cool kind of like combat system that's got enough room for you to figure things out. One of the cool things that I did, and I didn't realize until basically the end of the game, when I went to the one character who teaches you how to do stuff, and it's a move that he also teaches you, but I figured it out on my own. It's like, so there's an ability which is effectively recall. Like, you press a button and it puts a kind of crystallized version of Sargon there. You carry on going. When you hit the button, he kind of like phases back to the original one. So what I started doing was like, he has a charge move where like he pulls his sword back, and when you let go, he sends this massive, really powerful wave. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to do this. So I charge it, put down one of those like recoil crystals, let go. So the Sargon that I'm actually controlling would do his like charged wave move. Then I'd hit the recoil button. He'd go back in time and then do another one of those. So it's like, you do that. It's really cool. And then like you build juggles into that. And it's like very, very interesting, the things that you can do with it. And then you've got like, he's got a necklace which you can put like charms on that allow him to do different things. There's some absolutely incredible boss battles towards the end where it's like, it's super high execution and it requires a lot of like very specific. They feel like Dark Souls bosses at times where it's like, if you get hit by this move, it's over. Like, you are done. Recovery is going to be very difficult. But you can also like work your way around that stuff by,
you know, some charms that'll give you, or amulet, sorry, it'll give you a second. Like, if you die, you get one more chance. There's another currency that feeds into this meter that gives you more powerful abilities. And so one of them can actually like give regen health if you stand in a certain spot.
Yeah.
And there's an amulet charm you can put on that every time you get hit, that channels your damage into that. So you can do a nice little risk reward thing with your, and you can build, you can set up a build that just works for you. And it's very customizable in a really fun way.
So my build was like basically a Sekiro Bloodborne build where whenever I parried, it would, firstly, it was parry focus, which was, which I love doing. When I parried, it would create this like sphere around me where anything in there would slow down. Like very second, and also when I parried, I would recover some health. So my focus was entirely on parrying. It does the thing where it's like red move, which you can't parry, yellow move, which you can parry. And the yellow move, if you parry, imagine if you in like Sekiro, if every time you parried it, it did this really cool powered up cinematic like execution move. It has that. So enemies will attack you normally, you can parry that. But if they do like their yellow attack and you parry that, you get like a big damage anime style like. Kicks him into the air, flies up there, does loads of slashes, hits him back down, that kind of thing. And it's really, really satisfying. The other thing I was like, the story isn't great.
It's not. It's doing enough to push me along.
I feel like it ends way stronger than it is the entire way through. Mm-hmm. So like once the final sequence, like the final stretch is happening, you're like, oh, that's what's happening here. And it's kind of a cool conceit. It involves like a character that you barely deal with, and then it kind of like a bunch of these threads come together and you're like, oh, I understand the setup for this. I think like along the way it's like not particularly strong, but once it gets to the end you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of like a solid story that perhaps wasn't super engaging on the lead up to it, that is eventually like it becomes good. The other kind of tricky part is that I think the voiceover is not great. It's okay. I mean, there's one character that they forgot to replace the voice on, and it's like it's a text to speech character.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll be patched.
It will be.
Almost certainly.
I think they said,
it's the little kid voice from TikTok. And it's and like I remember being, I was like, I've heard this voice on those Minecraft jumping videos that are reading out Reddit, like,
my what's female the worst, 32 yeah, boyfriend.
What's the worst thing you've ever seen, like that kind of stuff. And you're like, I was like, what the what is this? And for a minute I was like, oh, they found the TikTok, the like TTS yeah. voice person.
Oh, she's on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I was like, okay, cool. But otherwise it's kind of like hit and miss, the voiceover stuff. But in terms of playing it, really, really cool. Some very, very satisfying and tricky like platforming challenges, which, as Lucy said, you can skip if you want to. There are, I feel like it goes on a bit too long.
How long did it take you in the end?
24 hours. Ooh. Or something. But I spent a lot of time like, just running around.
Yeah.
And it, I texted you about this. It does that thing where it's like the bad guy, you beat him and it feels like, all right, this is the final battle. And then he's like, ha-ha, my planet needs me, and flies away. And he's like, I will see you next time. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then you get like 4 or 5 hours more game. Thankfully, the 4 or 5 hours, are like, or the 3 to 4 hours, whatever it may be, is like a new power and a new area. And it's like, okay, this is good. But you just baited me with that kind of like, it almost is done.
Yeah.
But I highly recommend it.
I feel like that's what I needed to hear. Because I know people were pretty positive when like people were doing previews. And I was like, okay, cool. But I don't know if I'm really... it's my thing. And then I saw the reviews and I'm like, okay, it's a good Metroidvania, but you know, usually I just play Metroid and that's it, you know, like I get tired of Metroidvanias quickly these days. But I think hearing that with all the intricacies with combat, customization, platforming, all that stuff sounds pretty cool. When's it out? Is that tomorrow, right?
It's out now, I think,
or I guess today is
There's an enemy in there where it's like a jailer, which if he captures you, he you're teleported into a jail. Which is like, cool. Oh, you played Dark Souls, have you? Sweet. Oh, you played Bloodborne, have you? It's basically the
jailbreak.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically the kidnapper enemy from Bloodborne, and you're like, okay, cool, great, well done. But yeah, I highly recommend it. I think like Dan on Giant Bomb said like he thinks that it's one of the best games in this genre, and I think I agree now. At the very least, it does things that now feel like you cannot make these kind of games without this thing, unless you're just trying to be obnoxious about it. Like, I want that snapshot feature in every Metroidvania game now. So good job to Ubisoft. Is it Montpellier? Yeah,
it's so the Rayman team.
And Steve Watts reviewed it for us, and he said like, this feels like they found a new place for Prince of Persia to exist. And that's completely agree with that. Like, this is their new genre for that franchise.
Still waiting on that Sands of Time remake.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised if suddenly Ubisoft Montpellier are making a Assassin's Creed Metroidvania at some point soon.
They had those 2.5D ones a while ago.
The Russia one and the
China. The China one. Yeah, I think there was a Japan one as well before the one that they're currently making. So. Yeah.
Oh, no, it was Russia.
Oh. No, yeah, there was. I thought there was
Russia,
one in
Russia,
Japan.
China, and
that was set in Japan. Maybe I'm imagining it. Yeah, Jake, you've been playing The Last of Us Part 2 update.
Yes, I haven't touched the story because I played the story and I wasn't in the mood to re-experience that. Not that I didn't like it, I just didn't. Yeah, you know,
it's not a January. You're coming into the year. The nights are long.
Yeah,
it's cold.
But I've been playing a lot of No Return.
How are you liking that?
I think it's pretty good. I think it all hinges on the fact that The Last of Us combat is really good. At least I think Last of Us Part 2's combat is really good. I know it's not for everyone. But I think if you're really into the combat, then No Return is the perfect playground for it. Just these small missions that you can get loaded in that have a bunch of random parameters that kind of get played around with. And when it feels good, it feels great. Defeating whatever factions you're up against, it just feels really tight. I think like the roguelite elements aren't the best. They feel a little unnecessary. It feels short too. Like you can finish a run in like 30 minutes or so. But I do like there's like a good progression system where you can unlock new characters. You can get Joel. You can play as Joel.
Who is it? I was looking.
You can play as Joel.
You can play as Joel.
You can play as Joel. No. So Joel, there's like how many? 7 or something characters you can unlock?
It's 10.
Oh, is it 10?
Yeah.
Who is that last guy?
Manny, I think is what it is.
Who is that?
He's someone from...
We have Joel at home?
Yeah, he's someone from Abby's side.
But why is he the last character to unlock?
I was trying to figure that out too. I have no idea.
Because it starts with Abby and then you get Lev and then...
Yeah, it should have been Lev, I think, is the last
Is Joel
one.
Normal Joel or is it like... my head's caved in, Joel.
There's no head caved in, Joel.
That's where it should have been.
Yeah. However,
what about, is there a costume for that? Cause
there's, no, there are come costumes on. For Joel. You can get Joel from like Last of Us 1.
I did like the fact you can get was it Ellie in an astronaut
yeah.
suit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, like I said, it really boils down to like if you're into the combat, if you like Last of Us Part 2's combat, then it is definitely for you because it is the perfect place to really use a lot of mechanics and items that you could use in the story, but you kind of didn't just because the story kind of pushes you along so fast. You kill like 4 or 5 enemies at a time and move on. But this just throws a lot at you and you're really able to kind of stretch your... I don't know, combat muscles, because I think the combat in that game is pretty creative if you if you want to play it that way. But yeah, I think for folks who didn't like The Last of Us 2, not necessarily because of the story, but weren't wild about combat, I know some people don't like the combat in those games, and it's probably not for you. But yeah, there's some neat ideas with the roguelite mode, but I don't...
Not as good as God of War, is it?
I was going to say, like,
I saw
really
a lot of people say God of War is better. I didn't play the God of War one.
You should. It's really,
really
cool.
Really good. And it's also the way that it narratively ties in and it
yeah.
It makes for a more fulfilling very cool. experience.
I got to finish Ragnarok first.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, you do.
It's yeah, you kind it of takes have
place to. Yeah, I started playing Last of Us as well a little bit over the break and I really liked the game. I really liked the combat. Going back into that mode after playing Valhalla was it just yeah it didn't gel with me and I did drop off very quickly. I do want to go in and do and see the kind of unfinished level stuff and the
that stuff is really cool.
Yeah,
the levels themselves, they're very short, they're not like super compelling or even fun necessarily, but I think it's just cool that Naughty Dog included those and give people the option to check out work in progress levels, and there's a level of transparency that I just would not expect from Sony, Naughty Dog, anything like that.
Yeah.
So seeing that's cool, and I hope that is a trend, because I would love to see a lot of these work in progress levels, maybe as bonus things, because I think, you know, players can understand why they're not there. It helps that Neil Druckmann gives like a little, before you play a level, there's a little video where he explains why it was cut, what the thinking was behind it, like what was the original intent, and, you know, a lot of it's like kind of gray boxed out. Not everything is there. A lot of voiceovers missing, but it's cool seeing that. And yeah, I would love to see more of that. Just it's cool. I think it's worth checking out. I don't know if you need to do all of them, but
no, I feel like gaming is definitely missing its DVD extra features moment.
It really feels like that. There's so many extras in this. Like there's the guitar free play mode, which I was like, that seems kind of ridiculous, but it's actually pretty in depth.
People are doing it like regardless of it becoming a mode.
Has anyone done Wonderwall yet?
Probably.
But you can change your instrument. You use an electric guitar. You can change your model. You can be Gustavo. I don't know his last name.
Santarola?
Yeah. You can play as him with his banjo thing that he's got. You just play a bunch of chords. I'm sure people are going to do some creative things with that, which is kind of cool.
$10 to whoever does Through the Fire and the Flames.
Because
can't do him in Rock Band 4 anymore.
Rest in peace.
RIP DLC.
Can't. It's good. I think if you really like The Last of Us 2, it's worth the $10 upgrade or whatever it is. I don't know exactly how much it is. But
yeah, it's $10.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. That's everything from... Lucy, you want to add anything? Are you good?
Watched Poor Things.
Good movie.
Great movie. Yeah. Don't want to delve into the discourse around it. Mm. I had a nice time watching it.
Is there discourse around it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, mate. Oh, mate.
I mean, like, you understand...
It's understandable
why there's discourse.
I think I know what the discourse is. I just uninstalled... I'm not on Twitter anymore, so it's just like I'm nice.
Understandable discourse.
Yeah, it's just really a lot.
It's a lot, but I had a fun time.
Good film.
Oh, also, The Traitors season 2 UK version is unbelievable.
Watching episode 6 and 7 today. Hopefully.
Oh yeah, I gotta catch up. I mean, I've had it spoiled for me because, you know, I'm not even mad.
British Twitter.
Because I'm on British Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And so. I think what happened in the episode yesterday was so iconic, and even just enjoying it from the memes and stuff. If you are watching The Traitors, don't watch the American version where they've used a bunch of B-list celebs, C-list celebs. Come on, let's be real. They're all like housewives from Atlanta and whatever.
Yeah.
Watch the UK version. Regular people who aren't famous. There was one man in there, Paul, who I am genuinely afraid of.
Paul is worrying, man.
Paul, like, when he was being interviewed on the show to be like, do you want to be a traitor or a faithful? So it's basically Among Us. in a Scottish castle, they have the faithful and they have traitors. And every night the traitors have to pick off and kill one person. But also every night there's a big round table where everyone
accuses.
Okay.
It is phenomenal.
It's just drama, pure drama.
Season one, there was a magician. Yeah. Season two, we've got a clairvoyant, but we've got Paul. He was getting interviewed because Claudia, or the producers, pick who the traitor is going to be. And I think they start with two, and then the traitors pick the third one. It's three. They start with three, and then they have three,
and then they have Paul.
When Paul was being interviewed and asked if he wanted to be a traitor or a faithful, he was like, I want to be a traitor. And Claudia says, what words would you use to describe yourself? And he said, cruel. He's like, I've been watching this man feign ignorance as to who the traitor could be. Yeah. And then at one point he gets voted most popular or something.
Yeah.
And it is insane. There was one point where he basically starts fake crying.
Yeah.
And I'm losing my mind.
He brings his infant son into it. And
I'm ready to go home and see my boy.
Yeah.
So Tam and I watching it with a couple of friends of ours, and we just have a text chain where we're just, it's basically every single message is, I'm afraid of Paul.
In the first season, it's hilarious because there was one guy who was like, I am an expert on reading body language. He was like, trust me, I know how to read people. He would just constantly say, I know how to read people. And then he would make these, like, this is happening. Mad. I know it's this person. And he would be wrong every single time.
Meanwhile,
there's this other girl who's Maddie. Like, she just like, would say the most nonsensical stuff, and it would be stuff like, I think it's Angela because her shoelaces are always untied, and you're like, what's that got to do with anything? And like, she would accidentally keep being right.
Yeah,
it would be the right person, but the reason is completely wrong. So it's like really weird.
If you want to know how unhinged the first season of The Traitors was, there was a moment where this is awful. They voted out a woman because she didn't raise her glass to cheers with everyone else. And it was because she literally did not have an arm.
And they voted her out. Like, they were like, you're a traitor, we know. No,
they didn't vote her out because they accused her because of that. And she just went, I don't have this arm. But that's the thing. It's like, it's the smallest things get stuck in people's minds. And because she didn't like toast her glass with everyone else,
they went after
they just were like,
you're done.
Anyway, this show is fucking unbelievable.
It's British people are their most unhinged.
It is so unhinged. And the memes have been fantastic. There's a woman in it called Diane. What an icon. What an icon.
Old people in that show are just like, or like middle-aged to elderly people just seem to be doing the most unhinged thing.
The thing is as well, they also have these trials in the middle where they all work together to earn money that goes towards boring.
So shit.
Boring. Don't even skip past the only good part of it. I'm on my phone the whole time.
The only good part of those are is like during each of these trials, there's an opportunity to like get a shield that will protect you from being killed.
Yep.
But to do that, you kind of have to do something that would like disadvantage your team every now and so. Like if it's like carry this log up this hill, they might be like, if you go down this path, you can quickly grab one of these. So like you might be like, fuck these guys, I'm gonna go quickly get this. And then people will be like, you left us, we're voting you out, you're a traitor.
Because even if you have a shield, you can't get murdered by the traitors, but you can still get voted out.
Wait, what's this on?
This is on BBC iPlayer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So you need a...
I use a VPN.
So
it's...
Yeah. It's the one thing that finally got me to sign up for a VPN after all these years.
It's phenomenal TV.
Yeah, it's great. If you end up watching Traitors, please let us know what you think about it. In the meantime, you can find us all over the internet. Lucy, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, Lucy James Games.
I'm at Tomoh H on everything. Jake?
Can't find me. Oh, you can, but I just don't.
Maybe you just don't have it installed.
Yeah. We will see you back here next week. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe and all that kind of stuff.
Join the GameSpot Discord.
Hit us, one of us up, and we'll get you an invite. It's closed still, I think. I think so. I don't know. It's a very nice community.
Ask. Yeah.
We'll chat. I know there were talks for a while, but open it. But
just message one of us. My DMs are open. which is
for better or for worse.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
See y'all.